What do you need to know when prepping for and shooting on LED walls? And how about using in-camera effects with green screen? Where is the technology heading, and how can you get in on using it right now to level up your filmmaking? We're jumping into in-camera effects this episode with our guests, Kyle Fraser, Virtual Production Studio Manager and instructor at Full Sail University, where they're teaching students how to be ahead of the curve with this new tech. Christopher Cross, visual effects professional who has worked with some of Hollywood's biggest studios, including Bad Robot, Marvel, Paramount, Netflix, and more. And Jess Lauren, founder and CEO of Global Objects, which utilizes advanced AI technology to create a vast library of realistic digital images. She's literally building a library of locations that you can click in at the touch of a button. We've got so much to talk about. Here we go. This is the Working Director Podcast, a show that helps you go from emerging filmmaker to working director. As a filmmaker living in Los Angeles, I've directed over 130 projects, including 6 distributed feature films, all while helping filmmakers figure out how to level up in their careers. I do this show with one goal in mind, to help you become a working director. And if you want to join us for the live Q&A sessions and ask all of your questions, make sure you join our free private Facebook group by going to theworkingdirector.pro.
Kyle, I know that you work with students. You do this stuff probably every day. What is your favorite thing about the technology that you get to use now?
My favorite thing currently is, because it changes a little bit every day, right? But my biggest, the greatest thing about this is that we can let our students be as creative as they want to be on a regular basis. You're not confined to a soundstage or, you know, we're in Central Florida. You're not confined to shooting in the swamps. We've had students have shot on different planets, in airplane hangars, all over the world. And it's really now just limited to their imagination as opposed to all the physical restrictions they used to have to shooting in soundstages.
And Jess, you're working with a big, beautiful XR stage. What is your favorite part about it?
I think immersing yourself in 2 different worlds just by standing in a stage. You know, we have been lucky to film on many of the largest volumes in the world. And you can stand in the center and just load a level and be anywhere you want in the world. And it's just an incredible experience. So I'm excited about the technology. I'm excited for the growth of technology and for producers and students, Kyle, to learn how to use, these virtual production tools and environments.
And Chris, how are you using the tools currently? Because I know that you do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So I primarily work in visual effects. I also work in virtual production. A lot of times we'll just have a background. Sometimes we'll opt not to do blue screen and we'll shoot on an LED, which has its pros and its cons. But I particularly enjoy it because it allows the performance from the talent to be more authentic, because you kind of can see what you're up against, opposed to kind of like having to imagine more. On this side, I'm also excited about this because I come from the stage. I come from theater, and I've seen how people have used it in theater for production. So I think it's pretty cool too. So,
yeah, for sure. Kyle, since you're our professor, in-house professor today, explain to filmmakers, if you had to tell filmmakers what exactly is in-camera effects, how would you say that?
The way that I tend to explain it when people come through and do tours and stuff is that in-camera VFX is really just a window into a digital world. So whether you're doing green screen or you're doing LED volume, whatever it is, it's giving you the opportunity to shoot in-camera and see into this digital world that you've created in real time while you're doing it, without the need to shoot and then bring it into post and kind of wait and hope and make adjustments there. You're taking all that to the front end. You're getting all of your environments and all of your assets ready to go ahead of time. And then you're able to see your composites, or you're able to see your backgrounds on the LED wall while you're shooting to help with, like they said, the actor immersion and kind of really understanding and being able to have a conversation with your effects artist about what it is that you're trying to convey in real time. And it makes it a lot easier to really get a clean, polished look, especially if you're using an LED wall and you're shooting for final pixel.
So I know that a lot of love for LED walls comes from just even things like you have natural reflections and natural lighting. Not as indie filmmaker friendly yet, because it's, $20,000 a day for the most part for an LED wall. Whereas a green screen, I could do it in my garage. Would you even encourage any filmmakers to push to do LED walls?
LED and working in virtual production is not for everyone, right? And the key is lighting, right? And you think, oh, you've got all these walls. Oh, you have to still light your scene. So a lot of your budget from your posts can be moved forward, as Kyle said, and you can work it into your budget that way. However, it is cost prohibitive sometimes for producers to kind of figure out how to take those budgets and, you know, front load them. However, I see a lot of schools building these volume walls, and maybe there's partnerships that can be arranged with schools to help students learn how to use the LED volumes. But I think, you know, as adaptation, you know, people adopt this technology, the pricing will come down. And there's someone just gave a quote the other day. There's over 300 stages in the world now. And I don't know who's keeping track of it, but
wow,
there's more and more and more stages coming online. And I think with that is, you know, as Kyle's teaching his students, we want to make sure that people are learning the right way how to use this technology. And again, it's not for everything. It's not for every scene. You know, you don't want your films looking like a video game, you know? So we want to make sure that we're educating everyone how to use LED and how to light it and how to move forward, you know, into the world of filmmaking with, you know, these crisp scenes. And that's something we're working on is, you know, I'm Jess Loren with, I came from visual effects, but I have a company now called Global Objects. We just raised a lot of money and we're going to create the highest fidelity library of assets that you can kind of press a button or load onto your Perforce and have an environment ready to go. Because when I walked into these volumes, I was like, well, where's the library where I can press the button to be
right?
Where's Egypt? I want to be in Egypt right now and it doesn't exist. So I was like, okay, as an entrepreneur, well, let's make it happen.
You have to be able to shoot this correctly if you're going to do it, because you will, your costs will go up exponentially if you do it wrong. Right. Because I've seen people shoot and then realize what they shot, they don't necessarily want, or they want to make changes for it. And it's a lot easier to make changes on a blue screen than an LED wall. So you have a lot of like pros to shooting on LED raw, like, you know, in production. You just have to, you can't make shortcuts in the beginning of production. You have to do it correctly and make sure, you know, I'm not a VFX supervisor, but I've talked to VFX supervisors and we talked about how you have to, you know, make sure you're far enough away from the wall and like make sure you shoot it, you know, in the right way, in the right lighting. Because I've seen some pretty like questionable imagery come from it. But on the other end, like I've seen some bike shots, some motorcycle shots where we shot some stuff and some water scenes, or we've done fire scenes like explosions in water where we had the reflection coming off of water. And that was coming from the LED wall images. And that was amazing. It looked fantastic. And
I want to see the behind the scenes of this stuff. This is
yeah. Yeah, I mean, these kind of things, you can, like, it's so much easier to have natural reflections off the water when you have it, you know, on a wall than having to, you know, hire people to do that in post-production. So there's definitely pros to it. I have not used that technology in a indie film environment. But I do see how it can save you money if you know how to.
But I would say, like, the cost structure, like, you know, we did a commercial once and we did 7 locations in a day, right? So, like, if that location can work yeah. for a volume, you know, then you could save a shitload of money, right? Like, so if you're...
And your poor production coordinator doesn't spend weeks locking yeah. down 7 different locations,
right? But then you also have to make sure that you have, like, you know, there's a location fee, right, for your environment. You have to make sure that environment is built and ready to go for those 7 locations, what have you. And it doesn't all have to be in the engine. Like, you can use it still as well if it works for your scene, right. You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, I'd love to really jump to, because your students are doing a lot of in-camera effects using green screen. Am I correct with that?
No, we have a full volume. We have
region a 40
foot, yeah, we have a 40-foot wide by 16-foot tall volume with a 16-foot by 16-foot ceiling that we raised and lowered.
Wow. That. Yeah. Like, so if you're going to go to film school, y'all, forget USC. Go to Full Sail where Kyle's at. But let's back up a little bit from the volume stages, and let's talk a little bit about in-camera effects using green screen. And one, because obviously this is the easiest thing for any filmmakers to do. So what, first and foremost, if they are going to do something like, you know, they want to see the image on their monitor, even though they have a green screen, what programs are they using?
It's a little bit of hardware and a little bit of software, because you can't have just one without the other. So you need, you know, you need things like Genlock, a camera that can support Genlock. You need to have a tracking system, which is the big thing that will feed that information into Unreal Engine so that your real world camera moves match the camera moves that are in the game engine. So there's things like the Vive Cam Track system that's really great for people that are just starting out, because it's at a very small price point. And you know, for that plus a Blackmagic camera that supports the Blackmagic Pocket camera, I think has the Genlock N. You get those two things in a Blackmagic card that does Genlock, you're at a very low cost, you're up and running in your space, and then you just route an extra output from your Blackmagic card and your camera to a monitor on camera, and you're pretty much real time compositing and seeing everything using, you know, your Genlock camera, your tracker, and Unreal Engine.
LED stages, the biggest thing that I think comes into play is it'll be pre-production, making sure you have all your worlds. When you're doing that, like, what are your guys' recommendations for how to best make sure your pre-production is done right?
There's always the joke, fix it in post, right? And now it's fix it in prep.
Fix it in prep.
Well, if it's, you know, episodic, or if it's script based, you know, you do script breakdowns and just figure out, you know, what can we actually film, you know, on LED. So going from there and then figuring out, well, okay, you know, what's your budget for, you know, before you would rent out a location. Well, that location fee can now go towards building and renting or building your level if it's going to be in the engine, or, you know, to film on the stage that has the LED. So there's just a lot of planning that goes in prep, from your environments, your locations, where are we filming?
I mean, because you also need to come up with your physical sets, you know, as well. Kyle, how do you make sure, like, when you're teaching prep for this, what are you teaching your students?
So we start them quite a bit earlier than they're going to be in the stage. They start almost 6 months before they would come shoot in the stage, working on their script submissions and getting with. We have the benefit here of, we're not just a film school, or we're not just, you know, one type of college. We actually have a computer animation program. We have a game art program. We have a game design program. So we have all these other programs that are able to work with each other and kind of start building those relationships now. So we can actually get them started on getting custom environments made, you know, 5-6 months before their shoot time. And they have that lead up time to make sure that everything's looking right. And we bring them into the volume and let them put it up on the wall and see what works, what doesn't. And that's kind of the biggest thing that we push on a lot, whether we're renting the stage out to an outside client or having a student shoot in there, is we always build in prep days, because so many people are new to shooting on the technology that they just don't get it. So built into our budgets or our time with our students, everything has this prep day where you come in and we walk you through each one of the scenes that you want to shoot, make sure that your camera setups are going to work, make sure that, you know, your light cards are in the right place, or if you have to move some digital assets, we have time to do that. And doing just that one, you know, extra prep day allows them a lot of freedom and the ability to kind of feel more comfortable once they come in to start shooting. Because what we were finding is, when we were just bringing them in and having them start shooting right away, they were falling behind and they were getting frustrated and they weren't quite sure how to work in the space. But having a no stress day where you get to come in and kind of just play and learn the tech, the next day, most of our people end up getting ahead of schedule, because it's so much easier to quick shoot, do turnarounds and things in this space, that you're really able to move a little bit more fluidly and not have to worry about things slowing you down. So that's kind of the big stuff, is making sure you give yourself plenty of lead time and making sure you have like a prep day or a day where you can come in and just experiment and make sure things are working how you want them to.
That's Chris, I imagine better than we do here. They never give us prep time. So,
well, to ask Chris, since you're wearing big productions too, like, have you found something on day one that you're like, could have fixed it in prep? Do you have any horror stories?
I mean, honestly, there's been a couple times when, like, we know that the image going up there is not what we want. Like, we're just like, well, we got to go with it and try to make it work. Like, which is not the way you're supposed to do it. Like, everything Kyle said is what I wish we do here. But there's been so many times where we're like, well, we're going to have to fix that. And like, when you say fix it in post, we're the post, we're the ones fixing it. So, you know, I've also seen instances where we just put like previews in the background and we just work off of that until we get what we need to, you know, get done. So we know, like, we know it's going to be not what we want, but it gives us a blocking or a general sense of what we're about to do.
Huh. So how do you fix that in post if it's already burned into the camera? You rotoscoping everybody out?
Well, what they end up doing, well, there's been that where we had to roto everything out, which, again, this is the wrong way. Like, this is wrong, like 100% wrong. But, sometimes they just shoot a clean, like, image and then what we want, and then without actors in there, and then put actors,
Okay.
And then I've been in situations where they put a green screen up on an LED wall.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Which I found interesting. I actually have a question. Maybe, I don't know, Kyle or Jess, if you know, like, what's the pros and cons between, like, a green screen and an LED wall, or just a regular green screen? Like, what's the... I've always had questions about that.
The big con is that a regular green screen, while it might have some reflective coming off of it, it's not a light bulb, right? So if you put a green screen up on the LED wall, like, it's just flooding everything with green light. And it makes not only your compositing harder, but then the reflections that we're so excited about with using the LED wall on shiny objects, now all of that has to be hand painted out. So it's kind of a pain to have that. As far as using, like, what you're talking about, a lot of places are now, they're using a secondary camera. They're recording at 48 frames a second, and they're using ghost frames in between the real ones. So if you're not quite sure about your environment, you can actually ghost frame in blue or green screen in between the frames. So you can, all your odd frames are blue screen and all your even frames are the ICVFX final pixel.
What?
You can change your mind later.
Okay. That hurts my brain. Lucky has a question for you guys on this topic. He says, do you use pre-visualization techniques to build and shoot everything in the computer first?
When I do my own projects on the screen, I'll take the environment and I'll set up cameras and some of the Unreal Engine mannequins and do my previous storyboarding all inside of Unreal. Or if there's an excessive, like, camera move, do some animatics inside of Unreal, because it's all there. And it's something that I encourage a lot of our film students to get into, whether they're going to be shooting on the stage or not, is because, a lot of filmmaking is headed towards Unreal, but it has everything you could want in there. You can pick your camera, you can pick your focal length, you can pick your sensor size. They have pre-built dollies, pre-built jibs, everything you need to do animatics right there. And it's, one, it's super fun, but two, it's very helpful to have that when you walk into soundstage and be like, this is exactly what I want. I know I can get it.
On the note of green screen, while we sort of finish that whole topic up, first question is green screen... is it dying? Is AI going to remove green screen in the next year? Because I have noticed that there are AI programs that will remove any background, but it's still wonky. You can always see something on the...
Yeah, you still need a human to do the cleanup, for sure. Like, we still get a ton of work for green screen cleanup from many networks. Because, yes, there are AI programs that, like, Unscreen you can use, but there's still the muckiness. So...
That's good, because I'm hoping to be buying a green screen studio. And as AI was developing, I'm like, I'm screwed. Secondly, when it comes to using green screen as any filmmaker and doing in-camera visual effects, is there anything different in that prep versus the LED walls? Or is it all kind of the same?
So the prep is very, very similar, because you still need the environment done. You still need to know. The lighting becomes even more important with the green screen, because you don't have the reflections in the real world to look at. So, if you're shooting a spaceship landing and you want blue lights flickering on your person's head, you need to know that all ahead of time. So you really need to plan out and think a little bit more deeply about how your lights are going to work inside that green screen world to make sure that everything matches up right. But the pre-pro side of things is still very similar. Like, everything you used to do in post, you're going to do in pre-production, and you really need to have all of that mapped out.
What are some of the hardest things about shooting either of these with green screen or LED wall, as far as, like, blocking actors, changing angles? Like, are there any tips you guys can give about the actual production? We've talked about lighting is important, and you need to build some kind of sets usually to bring it forward. But, like, what are some other things that filmmakers may not be thinking about or not realize about shooting this way?
Your team is so important, like having people that are knowledgeable about the technology and really understand what they're doing and lighting it correctly and loading, your levels, et cetera. Like, that has to be on. So, you know, a VAD team, virtual art department, is, you know, building your environments, your levels. And then you have volume control. So who is the people that are making sure that the volume is working? So volume control. And then, you know, in our cases, we use a technical director, and that's just the person who shit hits the fan, like, you're ready to go. Because if you're spending $20,000, $30,000, up to $100,000 a day on a stage, you want to make sure that you have the right team in place, where if there's a problem that happens, you can get someone on it and not ruin your day.
I notice a lot of the stages that I've talked to, they kind of come with the tech director and often with their own camera people for a price and things like that. So I almost recommend using that stage's team for the jobs that they have, because they get it. And then, like, if you have your own DP, they can work with the camera people that the stage has. You are director, producer, you come in, but, like, rely on the technical director. Like, don't, like, there's just people there that are going to make your life easier because they get it. Someone like Jess, you know, she's in this world every day. She gets it. And I'm walking in like, this is pretty. What can we do?
Yeah. And you mentioned the DP. I would recommend working with a DP who has worked on an LED volume, you know, prior. And that's why these conversations are important, is if you are a DP, try and get yourself onto a wall, like anywhere, even if you could just go to a class. Or, you know, we here in LA, we host what we call First Fridays, and we kind of travel around and work with different studios to just bring people in and do a demonstration and have cocktails, right? So every first Friday of the month, we have an event somewhere. So even if you've never seen an LED wall, come to one of our events and we'll get you exposed to some of the technology.
David has a question popping in. One, let's go to his first. As a producer, what costs am I missing when considering moving scenes onto a volume? Could you break down the upfront costs that I'd be saving in posts, artists, composers, et cetera? Obviously, it always varies on project, but if you have like a ballpark idea.
If it's VFX heavy, you're saving all those costs if you're doing, you know, if you're working on a volume and it's final pixel, right? So, you know, VFX can run into millions and millions of dollars in a production. So it just really depends what your project is, what your scenes are, you know, sliding scale. Sci-fi or fantasy, these are great things to shoot on a volume because you don't have to have that like true, real photoreal look. So I think it's that's a great, you know, use case for working on a volume. And you know, how are you shooting space otherwise? And the green screen, right? So, and if you can get your talent, I think as Chris said, if you can get your talent on a volume and they can experience the environment, well, then you're probably going to get a better performance.
I would say for sure.
Oh, I'm hanging in a spacesuit on a green screen, or let's immerse them. Like I showed you pictures, let's immerse them into space.
Chris, is there anything you're working on now that's like you're using lessons learned to make it better?
What I can say is right now we are learning from the, you know, as we always do, like learn from the mistakes that happen on set. But, you know, when you're on set, what ends up happening is all the departments get crunched for time, right? So it's not necessarily their fault, but they get crunched for time. And then you end up kind of like post ends up kind of fixing what happened because of that time crunch. Well, in our case, like a lot of times we had images up on the wall that, like I said before, weren't exactly what we wanted, weren't correct. So a lot of times, I would tell you, hands down, lighting was the main thing that has like gotten us. And we've had like vendors be like, we don't like, there's only so much you can do in certain instances, you know? So like, it's like hands down, like prep, making sure you have enough time. Of course, you can only control your schedule as much as you can. And then also sometimes you'll get a director that just, you know, changes what they want. They just do, you know, they're like, oh, I think I want something different in the background. And then now we're sitting here trying to figure out how much it costs to roto an image out, you know, so there's that kind of stuff. But I will say, well, I've learned in the last few projects that I've done like probably like 3 full projects with a, you know, LED like screen or something like that in the background. And like the main thing has been lighting and then just knowing ahead of time what we want and hopefully sticking to the plan. It's always when the plan changes is, you know, it's all those gotchas come up. One of my favorite things I did recently is we shot a scene where we had an explosion going on in the background and we had our our actors in the water, but we didn't actually have our actors in the water, but they're supposed to be floating in the water. So we had actors on those like yoga ball. Okay, so they're sitting on the yoga balls and they're kind of like moving around and they're supposed to be in the water and they're supposed to be an image in the background. And it was kind of like, I admit, I was like, this is going to be so stupid. Like I was like, 100% like, this is going to be so dumb. And then they put it together, they had an image in the background and I'm like, it actually doesn't look bad. So I think the big takeaway is like, don't be afraid to like, you know, do something kind of weird and try something out. We had one scene we shot where we shot with an array camera, like outside reflections and stuff like that for our scene, but we also shot on an LED wall, the background, and we combined everything. I will say at the end, it was one of the best dropping shots I've ever seen for a movie that like not the best, but the driving shots alone, I was like, wow, this is great. So like the LED wall, like you can get some really good, you know, product out of it, like some really good end results.
Lucky has a question on that note, shooting different directions. He says, do you ever use a combination of rear projection, LED, front projection, glass plate art? So basically, are you using combos of stuff?
Yeah, I think I showed an example where we're using green screen and the volume and having to meld those worlds and make it work because of talent, you know, booking issues. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and we're working on getting XR and AR integrated into our system over here so that we'll be able to have foreground elements that are completely computer generated that the actors can actually interact with and we can still record in real time. So if you know you wanted some, they're in a cave and you want some pillars in front of them, we'll be able to live do that from the same Unreal scene and have a record out to that so you don't have to worry about adding that other stuff in it post. So we're definitely like taking lots of different things and scooping it all together.
I just want to cry. I'm like, I can't believe the stuff that we're going to get to do. It's amazing. So Kyle, wrapping up for you, what do you feel like is the biggest thing that maybe your students, is there like a consistent problem they run into when they're shooting on LED?
The biggest thing for students or outside clients or really anyone that we have coming into the space is just understanding that, you know, sometimes things are going to go wrong. The system's going to get grumpy and things aren't going to quite work right. And the more prep that you do, the better prepared you are for those things. And really just hammering on them that you really have to have everything locked down in pre-production. Because the more you try and bring the set to change, the more you're going to run into problems, the more that we're going to have trouble shooting things. So just really, you know, the more we can emphasize how important it is to do the pre-pro ahead of time and to really have everything locked in, the better the end projects end up being.
And just moving forward for you, what do you feel is your biggest thing that you want filmmakers to know?
Yeah, don't be afraid of it. Like, just jump in. We have jumped in, you know, quite fully, obviously. But even if, you know, be a PA on a stage, you know, that just to get yourself immersed into the technology. There's so many resources on, like, I'm a huge LinkedIn person. It's my favorite social media. So if, you know, connect with me, I post a lot about virtual production, and there's tons of resources. Check out an app called Lightcraft. It's a company we're working with. The founder and creator of Avid Software is behind funding this project, Lightcraft. And honestly, it's like on your phone, you can put people into a scene and start recording them. So some of our environments are going to go into this app. So, you know, these are easy technologies that you can just right now download on your phone and start working in, you know, quote unquote virtual production. So I think just jump in. Don't be afraid of it. Talk to people like myself, Chris, Kyle. There's, you know, follow the hashtag virtual production on LinkedIn, start connecting with people in virtual production, see if they're posting, and don't be afraid of it. Yes, it is cost prohibitive right now, but there are tools like what Snipe is doing and what, you know, Lightcraft is doing, et cetera. And we're building a library, right? Like, you don't have to spend $100,000 to build a level when we're going to have these assets available at different price points for students to the studio level.
Would you say that, Kyle, renting your LED stage in Florida at Full Sail is less expensive than, say, renting one in LA? Or are you guys pretty similar to?
No, I doubt we're the same prices as LA. We don't have that kind of studio money. But we focus more on the people that we bring into the stage need to help our students and help them, you know, be able to learn the space. So when we cut the ribbon on the space 3 days after we did our ribbon cutting, we actually shot a feature length film from beginning to end. Everything was done on the volume. And the big thing for us there was that it was able to be completely staffed by our students. So, you know, the director, producers, DP were all outside people, but our all the below the line positions were filled by students. And we're doing the same thing in January. We're bringing in a low budget sci-fi film where, you know, a majority of it is going to be staffed by students, and it gives them the ability to not only work on a volume and kind of get that experience, but they get to graduate with an IMDb credit on a feature length film. And that's kind of the stuff we more look for when we're bringing in outside clients, is how is it going to help our student experience?
That's great. And that's for indie filmmakers. You guys pay attention to that and get in touch with Kyle at Full Sail, because it may make sense to travel there if it's going to be a lot more affordable than shooting here. So that's always something to think about. There's a one tech question that we'll answer before we go out, because I know it's asked a lot. Liam asks, what are the pre-RQ tech specs for shooting a plate for a video wall? And I think that's a really important question for any filmmakers who are trying to shoot something that they're going to use later. Do you guys have, is there an easy answer on that?
Not for me. That is too complicated.
Yeah, it's above my pay grade as well. I was going to throw it to you, Kyle.
We've done it a couple of times, but we really try our best not to. We find that doing things in engine just yield much, much better results than generic plates. You get much better parallaxing. You get more control over the lighting, over everything. And so we tend to stay away from it, from doing just moving plates or driving plates. We would rather sit down and create a road for the end display to drive down than we would to, you know, just go out and videotape stuff, because we know that we get all of the benefits of the space using it that way.
I would love to invite anybody who's watching this in a replay, or, you know, now as you have more questions that come up, you know, follow these amazing humans, keep an eye on what they're doing, and definitely get yourselves out to a stage. And if you haven't yet, to see what's going on. I will be doing a lot of this VP on green screen, so we'll see how that goes. And all right, we're out.
Thanks for listening to the Working Director Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please rate and review, as it helps others find the show and helps us keep making great content for you. And if you want even more help with your directing career, check out theworkingdirector.pro, where you can apply to be part of the accelerator that hones in on where you currently are and helps you get to where you want to be. Whether it's this podcast, the accelerator, or our free Facebook community for directors, we're here to help you get to work.